Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hola, socios. Hola, equipo. My name is Neil.
I'm Liam.
This is John Nurnberger from Kansas City, Missouri, USA.
Moray Field near Brisbane in Queensland.
Edinburgh.
Barcelona.
And I'm a socio.
I'm a socio.
I'm a socio of The Big Interview.
Hi, this is Taylor from Shenzhen, China, and I am a socio of The Big Interview. My favorite episodes are the weekly insights from La Liga. Living out in China, I can't keep up with the league I love because of the kickoff times and the fact that it's just not covered out here. It's not very popular, which is very, very sad. And Graham and his insight really helps me to stay in touch with the league I love and the football I love.
Hello, my name's Neil White and welcome to another episode of The Big Interview at the World Cup. We are recording this moments after the end of the second semi-final. England 1, Croatia 2 after extra time. And Graham Hunter, it's nice to actually talk to you after exchanging messages during that match.
Yeah, yes. Messages which include language which, even given my liberal attitude to cursy words, we can't use in this podcast.
It was a kind of late 70s, early 80s Doctor Who match to watch. You know, as you kind of edged further and further behind the sofa and peeked out through the gaps between your fingers.
Very good. I wish you'd sent that line to me. That's very good. No, listen, I have to say, although it might be that nobody who's listened in is interested, but as a Scot who grew up not hating them, but always wanting them to lose, always wanting Scotland to beat them, never enjoying triumphalism coming at us from England, this World Cup, and to be fair, everything that I've seen Gareth Southgate trying to teach and inculcate and stand for, and I don't mean dress code or speaking nicely to the camera. I'm talking about the values that ever since he was under 21 coach, director of football, effectively, I'm not sure if that's the precise title he had. I think it's pretty damn close. He stood for everything that it seems to me has been the missing element of senior English football, given that they're just winning for fun, aren't they? If they'd won this and gone through to the final, it literally would have been world football domination at an international level, given that they already have two youth sides that are world champions. So therefore, it's been a really strange thing. And listen, I know I dominate because I talk so much, but you know, we've never talked about this, you and I, Neil, but this tournament has had an extraordinary effect on me in that, aside from liking a lot of the footballers, I've interviewed one-on-one quite a few of the players who are on the pitch on both sides. And it's despite feeling a stake because I know one or two of them, I was genuinely out and out supporting England and wanting them to win. At any rate, I have found this a really odd experience, Neil, in that during the game, it wasn't just a sporting horror. You talked about hiding. I think it was a Daleks reference you made, was it?
Yeah, I was thinking Cybermen, but Daleks works too.
And I think you could have been hiding behind the sofa because of sporting horror and saying, that is not how you manage a football game. That's one of the longest consistent sessions of bad decision-making on the pitch that you're likely to see in a World Cup semi-final. But beyond that, I cannot deny that a part of me was saying, I hope for all the people I've liked in sport in England, for the time that I lived in England, and for the way in which it will be ultimately healthy for the Premier League if the national team is playing intelligent, modern, mature football. And they just, you know, they just tossed it away. Not just the result, but they tossed away everything that has brought them this far. It's so depressing to watch.
Yeah, there's lots to talk about. We were talking just before we started recording. We kind of had to start recording because we found ourselves already dissecting the match without a button pressed, which is not a good look for a podcast. But, you know, we were talking about the halftime analysis in the ITV coverage, which I actually agreed with. The guys in the studio were doubting that there was any way back for Croatia, almost to a man. I agreed with that. I thought England had fantastic chances to increase their lead. I think a 2 or even a 3-goal lead at halftime would have been no flattery, you know, for England.
And would have been the basis to say no way back. But once you, at top level, don't take those chances, and what's more, the pattern of ill distribution of the ball started from about half an hour in.
Yeah, you said that. That's when we had to start recording, because you kind of cut across me and said, no, I thought this was coming from much earlier than halftime.
I thought they were wrong. I thought they were doing the wrong things. I thought it was going to end 2-1 in extra time. No, but given that what we've praised in this podcast, what we've tried to identify, is the link-ups whereby people passed to each other, and whereby it wasn't only passing out from the back. It wasn't just that Pickford could send a diagonal ball to Trippier or Young. It was the fact that you could see Dele Alli and Kane linking. It was the fact that you could see Henderson and Sterling linking. And Sterling, again, created some of the chances that you're talking about, either his runs from onto a deep ball, his ability to go past a man. There were a couple of occasions, once just screamingly in the first half, where, you know, Harry Kane had just denied himself a World Cup final, but probably the golden ball, that if he squares it to Sterling, who's onside in front of an open goal, it's 2-0, the wind is out of Croatia's sails, and England have got the cushion of a goal margin that allows them time to go, right, what is it Gareth Southgate said we do now? Yeah. So what I objected to, I didn't see the halftime analysis that you're talking about, what I objected to was they allowed, first of all, we often see tactics similarly, and one of the things that I absolutely adored, and it's easy to praise a winning coach afterwards, but Slatko Dalic, when he was sitting in his little bunker planning this game, said, England aren't particularly good in midfield. They don't have somebody like Modric, similar even to Modric, who will hold the ball, set the tempo, change the pace of a game, but also kill it a little bit for 5, 6, 7, 8 minutes if they're under pressure. And he said to Croatia, tired or not, press England's back three and press the goalkeeper. Now, they can pass once. They might even pass twice, but they won't be able to pass three times. And Zlatko Dalic read it exactly right. At the point that he came up with this theorem, his players still had to have the commitment, the belief in their coach, and the legs and the lungs. But they did. What I think it put a magnifying glass on is a phrase that you and I have batted back and forward during this podcast series, whereby England are a little bit further in the tournament than their actual development, age, experience and skill set provides them. I did a little analysis for a piece for The Athletic today where I looked at the impact of Champions League experience on this tournament, and the three teams with vastly more Champions League experience, finals, wins, double wins, goals in finals, semi-finals, were Belgium, Croatia and France. And England were conspicuously different in that they had, I think, only Henderson who played in the Champions League final. I could be wrong, but the number of players in the England team who didn't have last 16 quarter or semi-final Champions League, the number of players who hadn't been to a final, compared to the other three, was gigantic. And we saw that out on the pitch. And Dalic, the Croatia coach, said to his players, if you keep at the pressing And they weren't even pressing in groups of two or three in midfield. It was pressing high up the pitch and saying that back three will run short of options. They won't panic. Stones and Maguire can pass, but they will not have three passes or four passes to get out of trouble. And Dalic won the lottery. Absolutely got it right. And what England started to do when they were 1-0 up and they were a little bit under pressure, as soon as they were getting any sniff of the ball, they were trying to play it long or play a killer pass. And they, you know, there were instances where maybe Lovren or Vida, because the ball was long quickly, might have been out of position by half a metre or 2 yards or whatever it might be, and England might win a throw or might win a header or a second ball. But predominantly what happened was Croatia winning second, third and fourth balls as the pinball effect took shape. And I say again, well beyond the two goals that they scored, well beyond the fact that England then spent 35, 40 minutes running around like headless chickens, draining the energy that should have been used to pump to their brain, to the thinking part of football, never mind the creating chances or scoring. That whole just domino theory in reverse, instead of it falling in your favour and everything falls that way, everything was falling away because it began to be an impossible thing for England, because of their own inadequacies, to keep the ball, to take the sting out of Croatia, to slow the game down, to make sure that Rakitic and Modric, if you notice for the first 65 minutes, there's about 35 metres between the two of them and they aren't partnering up. And Modric is very, very deep. And he comes into his own when the game is already won in everything but the scoreline. And, you know, I'm not saying fools, idiots. It's not the finger of castigation or blame. It's just such a disappointment that nobody on the pitch could realise and say, wait, we've shed our personality. And that, again, it might be too harsh to say Southgate possibly needed to say Dyer and Henderson together in midfield, sacrificing one of the creative players and saying, we will not lose this 1-0. Did they watch the France display? Did they watch Kante and Pogba?
Yeah, the France semi-final from last night really was at the forefront of my mind watching that second half unravel. You know, the difference in the game management. But also I want to pick up on something that you've just said there about the lack of individuals on the pitch saying, okay, stop, okay, think, okay, slow it down. And I wonder if that ties in with your experienced Champions League argument, kind of umbrella point. And I mean, there's a lot to like about that England team and there's an awful lot of talent there. But who amongst that group are the, you know, it's kind of like a cliche, but the Roy Keane type of player. And if you think back the last time England made a semi-final, that 1990 team had plenty of individuals who would take responsibility, who would shout at each other, who would make those on-field decisions. And maybe it's the kind of thing that you don't see watching on a TV set, but it didn't seem to me as though there were many people in white shirts calling the shots, you know, changing the tempo, changing the message.
Yeah, but I mean, bad decisions in a fledgling football team, not a bad football team, because I agree with you wholeheartedly. I don't renounce a millimetre of what we've both been saying, and I, you know, foghorn leghorn here. Maybe I've been shouting it louder, but I've liked the process. I've liked the message from Southgate. I like the planning. I understand the way, the various means via which he's built team spirit. It's patent that they've enjoyed each other as well as the experience. It's patent that he's applied science, both sports and psychological, to the art of penalty taking and saving. The myriad of things that have been enjoyable and quite uplifting about England so far, given that we both know, you and I, that there is a tranche of young talent which will be coming to international fruition over the next 5, 6 and 7 years to make England, unless something outrageous happens, a very potent, very interesting, very enjoyable international force. So all these things stand. But in a fledgling team, when you're talking about you know, Lord, had they had Roy Keane at this age, they'd have won that game, I think. But bad decision making, and that isn't just stupidity. Sometimes, as you well know, it's the rush of blood in your ears. It's the semi-final. We scored this wonderful goal. Croatia aren't settled yet. Yeah, they're pressing us, but the fans are roaring.
Well, that's the Champions League thing. That's the Champions League point that you made, isn't it? They've not been at that magnitude. They've not been in that situation. You know, they're breaking new ground.
In and out of the furnace until they're blasted into, you know, tungsten toughness. Oh, I've been here before. I know what happens if we do this. Ah, whoa, whoa, whoa. Now, there was nobody doing that. And the first person I reached to of the recent generations that could have shifted that was Hargreaves. Hargreaves and maybe if you'd put a Rio Ferdinand in midfield. But Hargreaves was a guy who understood absolutely the value of maintaining the ball and how to do it. And I remember, I'm certain it was the game against Portugal with 10 men, where Hargreaves played one of the best international performances I've seen from anybody from these islands in my lifetime, doing two men's work, leading by example, but also by precision, by positioning, and by demanding that other people take the ball from him and then give it back to him when he makes a 3-yard run to create a triangle, an angle. Now, much as though I like and enjoy some of the attacking elements of Lingard's play, of Dele Alli's play, of Sterling's play, of Kane's play, between them, they all lacked about 70 4-yard movements when they could and should have given teammates on the ball a perfect and easy angle via which to shuttle the ball and beat the press until blooming Croatia ran out of juice, ran out of belief, went, hold on a second, this isn't working. And instead it went the other way. Croatia knew because they have been through the furnace. They have won, you know, they've got Modric with 4 Champions League titles. Rakitic, having scored in a Champions League final, won a Champions League final, won a Europa League. Mandzukic, having played in 2 Champions League finals, scored in both of them. The keeper, having played in a Champions League semi-final, the list goes on. Versalico, Europa League winner, Champions League finalist or semi-finalist. They knew, Neil, they knew they were like bloodhounds and they were, yep, there's blood in the water here. Again, you know, listeners, the socios know when you don't need to be fed when you're tired by immediate goals. You need to be fed by the idea that the coach is right, we're right, they're crumbling, it'll happen. And all through the night, from 30, 35 minutes onwards, until the Mandzukic goal, and until, you know, Trippier falls over, and England commit fouls late on when one last goal can take them to penalties, Croatia knew. That's what I swear I saw. Croatia knew. And I knew, I absolutely knew from before halftime, that unless there was a mass transfusion of new legs, calmness on the ball and movement and leadership in midfield, then England were going to lose.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break. Back with more soon.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at UH1.com.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's stamps.com, code program.
And we're back. Graham, I want to pick you up on your Owen Hargreaves point there. That's really interesting. I mean, obviously Hargreaves learned his trade in Germany. I'm drawn to a point that you made in your book about Spain's three tournament wins, about how those guys travelled away from Spain and picked up a lot of stuff that they then applied to their time with the national team. And I wonder, I mean, we've spoken about this before. I've been in the room when you have spoken with footballers for the big interview about this, but is there a lack of export from English football?
Yeah, you're talking about export to import, aren't you? Because you're right, I can't believe in researching, although my point was a little bit different for the article I'm writing. I can't believe that I didn't fall upon that other glaring thing that you've correctly pointed out, that if you look at the Belgian team, French team, the Croatian team, they play just about everywhere except their own country. And England, I think every single player, isn't it? Every single player in the squad plays in England. And I think that what we've learned, we can see it with our own eyes, but what leading professionals tell us is that the very act of moving to a well-managed, ambitious club in a foreign league will automatically tell you, teach you things, imbue you with things that it's next to impossible to get if you stay at home, however good you are. And I think that, you know, I saw that even with players who didn't then bring it home to Spain. It was you know, brutally obvious in Piqué and in Cesc and in Alonso and in Pepe Reina. You know, Cazorla, we could name them without fail. But I saw it too in Raúl. I saw it in Raúl about Schalke. Raúl, a guy who you genuinely, having watched his career, would have thought that he would never play anywhere else. And still more than Hierro, who was a tough guy, this was the crown prince of Madrid. He went to Schalke. And I watched him at Schalke learn German, you know, follow the tradition of singing with the fans, going at the end of the game with the rest of the team, standing on top of an advertising banner and taking a microphone and singing with the fans, or fighting like I'd almost never seen him fight for Real Madrid in a cup game, which was Schalke Bayern Munich or Schalke Dortmund, and they eliminate the bigger side. And the change in him, extraordinary. We've talked, I guess, to Gaisca Mendieta about life in England. We've talked to Steve McManaman about life in La Liga as an Englishman. There must have been others that, you know, we've, Chrissy Waddle, we talked about the complete cultural differences that reorientated his mind. Didn't augment his skills. You know, the skill set probably stays the same if you're elite. But what changes is your diet, or your attitude to the media, or your attitude to game management. Who chases, who doesn't, how hard you work in training, what your weight should be. So was that potentially another thing that was missing when England were required to realise tonight, from before half-time, that they were beginning a process that would lose them the semi-final? Yeah, I take your point, and I should have thought of it sooner.
So, Graham, if we look at the success that England's had at youth level and those players coming through, and they're not so far behind this current England team that they're going to miss each other. You know, this is going to be a kind of combined group at some stage. And is this lack of adventure, this lack of foreign experience of living and working in a different country, is this the thing that's maybe going to prevent them from reaching their potential?
Well, you and I both know that what we're talking about is an added element. Neither of us is talking, and nobody should confuse the issue about saying, hey, if you're halfway decent and you go and play for Benfica, suddenly you'll be a magician. What I think we're talking about is the added repertoire that a new language or new cultural instructions or new tactical instructions or a new attitude from, you know, the crowd in the Westfalenstadion can give you. Now, the comparison I suppose you're making, given that it was Hargreaves we picked on, he must have come back to Manchester United aged about 26, 27, and you're talking about those teams that won the World Cup at under 17 and under 19 level for England. Well, interestingly enough, I mean, the standout one is Jadon Sancho, because City have got cosmopolitan footballers, a Catalan managing director, a Basque sort of head of scouting, head of recruitment, Pep Guardiola's coach. And Jadon Sancho, a standout footballer, chose to go and play at Dortmund because he thought he would be quicker in the first team, because he thought that there were things to learn in Germany. And the reports back that I've had, given that I know people at the club, have been pretty near stunning. In a very difficult season for them, he has played a lot of football and he has stood out. The ones I know less about would be Ryan Kent, who Liverpool I know liked and went to Freiburg. Chris Willock went to Benfica from Arsenal. Rhys Oxford, again, Borussia Mönchengladbach are, you know, evidently thrilled about this kid who started at West Ham. There are others who I don't know. Mukhtar Ali went to Vitesse Arnhem. I don't know enough about him. But suddenly there's Kaelin Hines at Wolfsburg too. None of these are being touted by you or I as therefore, because they've gone abroad, it's automatic that the progression will be brilliant. But it is, in answer to your solid point, if you've got an attitude amongst the next generation that instead of only thinking about moving abroad if it's Real Madrid breaking the bank for you and giving you €500,000 a week at that stage in the future, if it's viewed as by the talented, already achieving footballers coming through at England youth level, that there is an extra value in testing yourself in Spain or France or Italy or Germany, then it would make you all the more optimistic for the next decade. I've always said that, number one, I'm sick of the build England up, then slam them in the media. The fans love them and then hate them. And you see a giant footballing power playing inadequately at international level. I want to be able to turn the television on or go to a match or go to a tournament, enjoy England playing. So that's what we're talking about. And I think that the fact that these youngsters have got a different cultural outlook, maybe because of their backgrounds, parental or social, at any rate, I think that that's also a point for optimism, in that they don't seem to be as afraid of going abroad as their predecessors were.
Okay, let's not end this podcast without talking about the World Cup finalists, Croatia. Huge achievement from this relatively small nation to make it to their first final. Guts and gas and some outstanding performances in that team. And I know you're becoming increasingly interested in the man in the white shirt on the sidelines too.
Yeah, he kind of looks quite a cool guy anyway, because you barely see a word coming out of his mouth. He mooches about the touchline like some guy who's only watching a kid's game until he can get to the bookies or the snooker. I mean, you and I talked off mic about the fact that following the Russia game, I think both of us had our doubts about whether Croatia's energy levels, stamina levels, would potentially betray them if the match against England went long, and it wasn't like that. And what stood out was that the belief by the squad, not just the starting 11 in Zlatko Dalic's idea, and the way in which he arranged the team, the way in which he asked them to press, the width, the two wide men gave them, the way in which neither Trippier nor Walker was allowed to do much damage on the run going forward. All of these things give me a little bit of optimism that the fact that, you know, Mandzukic left the pitch in tatters, he wasn't just time wasting. Vrsaljko, you know, had been ruled out of the game, played, has that come at a cost? Subasic was rolling around in agony against Russia. It looked like a, you know, hamstring muscle. It turned out only to be cramp again. At this stage, with a day's extra rest for France, having bossed the game, which they most certainly did last night in the other semi-final against Belgium, with a better 1-11, with a deeper bench, with Deschamps having yet to be really tested by his opposite number. You know, the whole thing paints like France have got a hand and a half, eight fingers on the World Cup trophy. Again, that's how it paints. The things that make me interested. Zlatko Dalic, you mentioned it, beyond the pressing, beyond the way in which he rearranged to put Brozovic deeper and Rakitic and Modric nearer to each other as the game advanced. I really liked the way that he'd asked Vasiliko to be not quite on the post, but between Zubizic and the post when the cross comes or the corner comes in for Stones's brilliant chance to win the semi-final, header on target. It's going to beat the keeper. There's Vasiliko popping up to head off the line. Rebic, I think, had been running his luck all night, was eventually booked, should have been booked earlier. As soon as Zlatko Dalic realises there's this vague possibility that because Rebic has got blood roaring in his ears, you know, the sub is made. Off comes number 18. I just look highly upon what I've seen of Dalic so far, and he's going to need to, A, get the recuperation right, B, work out whether there's a needs to be a change in the starting 11 for energy alone. And then he's got to unpick France. He unpicked England and it worked. So in the lead up to Sunday, what I need to research and what we need to find out is whether this is a 12-man Croatian side, the 11 to start, and Zlatko Dalic giving them an extra brain on the pitch, giving them tactics that will unpick the outstanding favourites to win the World Cup, which now, without any question whatsoever, must be France.
Okay, that's our show. We'll be back to preview the 2018 World Cup final, which we now know is France versus Croatia. Dos vidanya, old boy.
I really hope you're enjoying these World Cup shows. We've got huge plans for next season, but we do need your help to make them happen. Go to patreon.com/GrahamHunter right now to become a socio, a member, to join us, to support us. You'll get an extra big interview every month, plus lots of other bonus content. Last season, our members got 9 exclusive big interviews, including Rafa van der Vaart, Troy Deeney, and Roberto Di Matteo. So go to patreon.com/GrahamHunter. Do it now, please.
Small details are big surfaces, tight corners are odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.